So we're now at the third Sunday of Lent, and the first Sunday is always the temptation of Jesus in the desert. Second Sunday is always the transfiguration. And then as we get deeper into the Lenten season, we look at that strange tension between the boundless mercy of God on the one hand, and yet our responsibility to do something with that on the other hand. And so there is judgment. But the judgment has so much to do with us more than with God. How are we responding to the grace? So that reading from Exodus is about the beginning of the whole Exodus story. So much about God's mercy, about God hearing the cry of the distressed, taking the side of the poor, actively coming to save people, rescue them from the darkness and the slavery and the death, and leading them out into the wilderness where he forms them as his own people, but becomes disappointed and frustrated with them because of their unfaithfulness. They keep wanting to go back to Egypt. They keep demanding things of God, feed us, water us, tempting God at Meribah. And so in frustration, that whole generation dies off before they are able to enter into the promised land, which is a kind of a biblical notion of transition, of new generation, of an old death of the old generation and a whole new generation entering into the promised land. And Paul, in that second reading, is telling these Corinthians who have been baptized, and so therefore they feel a certain security. They're not like the rest. They're not like the unwashed. They feel a certain sense of superiority, and they even are tempted to not work for their salvation, to not respond to the grace, to just sit comfortably and relax and continue sinning. And Paul says, what about all those people who were rescued from Egypt? They were baptized into the cloud, which was Christ. They were baptized in the Red Sea, which was baptism. You're no better off than them because they sinned and they died. So don't get too comfortable. He's always challenging them to become more than they were. And that's what grace is all about. You know, God is calling us to a fuller life, not necessarily an easy life, not necessarily assured and comfortable, but greater. To reach out into the future and trust in the unknown, to trust in what God has planned for us rather than what we plan for ourselves, to let go of our control, to make ourselves vulnerable to grace. And so in the gospel, Jesus, people are saying that these bad things happened because they were sinners. And there's always in every generation a temptation to say that. Well, this happened to these people because they sinned, and this is God's punishment. And Jesus says, don't go there. Jesus doesn't try to play theologian here. He doesn't give any explanation for why bad things sometimes happen to good people. He just says, don't even think about that. What you should think about is your own salvation. Be aware that if you are not willing to repent, and to repent is to turn around, to change your mind, to change your life into divine life through grace. So the fig tree was one of the predictions in the book of Deuteronomy that they would enjoy in the promised land. In the first reading, there's mention of milk and honey. But in other places in Deuteronomy, there's also fig trees. And so Jesus tells this parable about a fig tree. And it's in a vineyard, in an orchard. So we're talking about carefully cultivated, fertile ground, fertilized and hoed around and taken care of. And yet, despite the fact that this fig tree is rooted in holiness, rooted in God, it's not bearing fruit. And so the owner says, well, it's wasting the soil. Why should this soil be wasted on this fruitless tree? Tear it down and we'll put a good tree in its place. But the gardener, who is Jesus, says, well, let's give it more time. We'll give it more fertilizer, we'll hoe it one more time, and then you can cut it down. Remember the story of Easter morning. Mary Magdalene goes to the tomb, and she doesn't find Christ in the tomb, but she finds him, the resurrected Lord, outside the tomb, standing there, and she thinks he's the gardener, and so she asks him where he put Jesus. And in a way, it's not a mistake. He is the gardener. You know, the first gardener was in the Garden of Eden. Adam was put in charge of the garden to tend it and to take care of it. And our whole theology of ecology and taking care of the earth is based on that passage, that we're tenders, we're gardeners, we're taking care of God's creation, we're loving it and nurturing it and hoeing it and fertilizing it and making it more productive than ever. Well, Jesus, the God human, is the gardener par excellence. He's the new Adam who never lost the intimacy of Eden. And so he's nurturing in a way that Adam was unable to do. But we are baptized into Christ, and so we are good gardeners along with him. We take care of the earth, we take care of each other, we take care of ourselves. We tend and nurture what God has planted, namely our lives and our salvation and everything around us. Yes, God's mercy is never ending, but God is also at the same time challenging us to do something with that grace. Those who just sit on it and presume that God will take care of everything will find themselves lost.